Hello and welcome to Wall's Wisdom. My name's Mark Wall and today I'm going to be joined by Neil Hutchinson from Everything Voice. In this episode, we're going to be covering mobile data, excess data charges, the controllability of your SIMs and routers throughout your estate, some of the tools that are on offer to give you full control of it, and whether a VPN is something that you should be using within your estate. I hope you enjoy. Thanks for joining us. So I'd like to introduce our good friend Neil from Everything Voice. We've been working with Neil for the last year, in fact, and it's been a great experience trying to understand the security side of the business and SIMs and communication. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Neil, and if you can just tell me about yourself and the business and how it all started.
Well, thanks, Mark. I mean, it's been interesting as well learning about the security customers and installers and what they face on a day-to-day basis and the challenges they face. We've had to adapt a little bit, I must admit. We've had to change the way we do things just slightly in some cases. But in terms of your question, where do we start? We myself and my business partner set up the business in our mid to late 30s, probably. So mid 30s, I'm 48 now. So getting on a bit. We set it up around about that time, as a lot of people tend to do once they've had the experience in the workplace and they've realized that there are things that they want to perhaps do better, or they want a bit more flexibility. And Richard and I just decided at the time we wanted a bit more flexibility, and we had some ideas that we wanted to bring to fruition. So we were working together in a distribution role for a big electronics distributor. They're an American electronics distributor, but based in the UK, in Harrogate. So working there, and we decided at the time that the people that we were selling our products to as a distributor were perhaps not getting it a lot of the time. You know, they were missing out on opportunities to differentiate and so on and so forth. So we decided to have a go ourselves. And 11 years later, we are where we are today. I mean, our business has changed in the last 11 years. We started off purely as a communications provider. So our projects were predominantly telecommunications focused. So that's always been at the core of what we do, but it was more fixed line communications that we were involved in, providing telephone systems, internet access for businesses. I suppose over the last few years, it's changed quite dramatically now, in that we are doing more and more and more and more mobile data projects than we ever have done in the past. In the last 12 months, we've turned on in excess of 1,000 connections on mobile data, which we'd have never done quite a number of years ago. But we came to the decision to do this because we knew there was a big opportunity. The market wasn't saturated. There were a few big players in the market, and they found themselves in a position where they are only able to make money from reselling the data that you don't use, effectively. The mobile data that you don't use, they can resell and resell and resell and resell and resell. So that was their commercial model. And we thought we could perhaps do that a little bit better. And it's worked for us, really. You know, the last year is testament to that. We're saving businesses and installers money every day. We're keeping control of their costs, because a lot of these costs go on to their bottom line. It's not passed on to the customer. And it's great. You know, it's an enjoyable thing to be doing, really. We just find it dealing with the security installation market, just like dealing with friends, really. Most of the customers that we have my mobile number, their account manager's mobile number. We get calls during the evening, during the day. At the weekends, we'll get the odd message. There's not any expectation that we're going to jump on it and fix it, but we do. Ultimately, you know, what sets you apart is how you deal with the people that you've got and how you deal with your customers and whether they enjoy dealing with you. We tend to find that we don't lose many customers. They stay with us for quite a long time. And I think that's testament to the fact that we've got a great support system.
We've been working together for the year. So what would you say, whenever we've sort of made any introductions, what's the most common thing or theme that people are coming back to you and saying, right, okay, we'll jump on a meeting, and you start to ask the obvious questions of how much data and whatever. Mm. What's people's perception of the amount of data they're using?
I think the common theme, I mean, it's a difficult one, because quite often, I think I've mentioned this to you once before, actually, but quite often you tend to find that people accept the status quo. I must admit that I'm exactly the same. You know, quite often I'll get my mobile phone bill through I'll look at it and think, is it roughly the same as it was before? That's fine. And then when it comes to actually renewing and looking around for another product, I just don't tend to do it because it's quite low value to me, really. However, I think the common theme that we're getting now with installers is that they feel that they're getting a raw deal. They don't feel that they're getting the best possible deal they can get from their provider, but they don't really know how to go about analyzing it. And more importantly, if they got the answer from research that, yeah, actually you're spending more money than you should be spending, have they actually got the time to go out and do anything about it? So yeah, the common theme is generally, in all honesty, is cost. It's way that, you know, people are always looking for ways to save a bit of money and to reduce their overall expenditure. But it's got to be of sufficient value to them for them to actually go out and swap the SIM cards out or swap the routers out. It's got to be a decent amount of saving that we can offer. Where we find the savings is in really strange places. It's not always a case of just looking at your current rate and taking 10% off or 20% off your current rate. That's not how you fix the problem that you've got where you're spending far too much money on mobile data. The way you fix it is by using what data you buy in a more efficient way and only buying what you need rather than buying too much. So yeah, I think that is the common theme. The other theme really is about control, getting control over their installed base and installed estate, because it's quite a critical piece in the puzzle, really, when it comes to an on-site deployment. The comms is quite crucial. So they want more ways to be able to have control over their sites and the comms at their sites instead of being beholden to one or two suppliers that just hang on to the keys of the kingdom. So those are the two main themes, cost and a bit more control.
I think, as you said, you know, one, you being at the end of the phone, just having that ability to dial in, see where your SIM is, see how much data's, whether it's roaming and you know, you don't know where it is, or whether, yeah, as I've been on today, you know, whether the SIM is on a different network, and I think you pointed this out, it goes onto, yeah, the first network it finds. People just think it's a roaming SIM, but yeah, it is once it's fixed, but that's it. Yeah. But yeah, seeing that back at base or seeing that in the back of the van or whatever it is, complete control is something else.
And a lot of our installers really do understand, you know, just from a time-saving point of view, you know, we get calls. And it's not that frequently, in all honesty, but once or twice a month, we might get a call from an installer that's got a tower that's lost its communications and it's a good 4 hours drive away, let's say. Historically, their only choice is to jump in a van, go down, restart the router, hope it comes back online again, and then trundle back another 4 hours back home. You know, we've introduced our installers to tools that allow them to interrogate the routers remotely without a communications link, so over SMS or over text messages. And that's been a massive, massive time saver. If it saves an installer from having to jump in a van and travel 4 hours on a Friday, then it's got to be good, hasn't it?
Back to the cost savings, isn't it? You know, all that adds up to X amount per year, isn't it? So
it's definitely, you know, cost savings, yeah, without doubt. You know, it's also just giving busy people like the guys and girls that own these companies time to enjoy with the family rather than having to jump in a van and travel across the country to do something so ridiculous as reboot a router. Yeah, anything that we can do to help it sort of make the lives a bit better is all worthwhile doing.
So one of the other added benefits is as you say, being access to that portal. I know you've done it in the past and it seems to be coming up more often. It's just that ability to configure the routers before they even get to the engineer to save him time and money, and also to add to even setting up VPNs into monitoring stations. You know, yeah, all that is a service that I think is just a great add-on to what you guys do. In the world of the VPNs and providing that service, why are most people setting up a VPN into a monitoring station? What's the size of the installer, or what do they see as a benefit to do that?
So there's two or three things, really. The first thing is, it's reality that it is a more secure way of doing things. If you've got your devices behind the firewall, an enterprise class firewall that's not even had to be managed by you, then that's got to be a really good thing, hasn't it? As long as the critical thing in that is, as long as you've got easy access to it yourself as an installer and your monitoring station can still do what it needs to do, then there should in reality be no reason to go any other way. So that's the first thing. The other thing is the cost. IP addresses are a bit of a premium. They always have been, you would argue anyway, but we're running out of IPv4 addresses. You know, it's and the way that, so we've actually looked into recently purchasing a big block of IPv4 addresses to use with our mobile SIMs. But what's involved in that, the auctioning for IPv4 addresses, the competition to buy them is so fierce that the cost of IPv4 addresses is just through the roof. Very, very expensive to buy. So when a service provider goes through that process of buying IPv4 addresses, they have to make that money back. And installers end up paying the premium for a fixed public IP address from a service provider. So when you get to sort of 100, 150, 200 SIMs, and if each SIM you're buying is costing you another 8, 9, 10 quid a month for the public IP address, that really does soon add up. And that's the other reason why I think people tend to favour going down the private IP address or the VPN type route. Now, part of that obviously is we've got to make that work for the security installer. We all know they rely heavily on alarm receiving centers. So we have to build in the links and the connections to these alarm receiving centers so that if the installer wants a solution which incorporates private IP addresses, that they can do that easily and without having to spend a load of money and build a load of complexity into everything. So I think security, just to summarize, security is the main reason that people want to go down this route. And because the SIMs are behind an enterprise class firewall that's managed by experts, then it's got to be a good thing to do. And the cost, specifically the cost if you're scaling, if you're talking about one or two devices, there's a fixed public IP address has got its place. But anything above 20 or 30 devices, it's always going to be fixed private IP in the majority of cases.
I think you would hope as well with most installers, when they sit down and work it out how many SIMs they've got and everything else, they're probably in that region for the amount of systems that they've got out there. And let's face it, yeah, Everything's being monitored now, isn't it? Everything's online. Do you see any challenges with that within to the monitoring station, or is it? I mean, most of them are quite techie, aren't they? So
the monitoring stations we've worked with are all really, really good. They have brilliant IT support. They have really, really good people that know what they're doing. And it's not a complex thing, you know, just as getting a private link into an alarm receiving center for our installers, so that when they receive a router and a SIM, it connects the alarm receiving center without any issues, is not a big job. It takes a little bit of planning, and we have to get working with the alarm receiving center just to test everything and make sure everything's working correctly. And then obviously we have to monitor it. So we have to monitor the health of the connection. So we know that there is an outage. We know about it before our installers know about it and have to contact us. That's obviously quite important as well. There's no major challenges, in all honesty. We all work together very, very well. And the installer doesn't get to see any of this. They get buffered from it, really. They don't get to see any of the setup, the configuration, the questions over this, that, and the other. It's done between us and the alarm receiving center. So the installer just needs to order a router and a SIM from us, tell us which monitoring station they use or alarm receiving center they use, and the routers get sent out pre-configured. But the pre-configuration service that we do is really just a time saver. It was off the back of a few big tenders that we won about 12 months ago, where one of the major requirements was zero touch provisioning, which is really all about them effectively being able to get the hardware direct from the warehouse and either sent to them or sent to the customer or sent to a regional office, a regional engineering base, and then have the installers just go out and focus on doing what they are there to do, which is to fit the security solution that's being put in for the customer, and not have to worry about one of the small cogs in the wheel, which is the comms. Unfortunately, though, comms, if you get it wrong and it's not working correctly, is a bit of a showstopper in a lot of cases. And 9 times out of 10, it's configuration. It's perhaps that engineer that's done that job has got tons of knowledge and tons of skill, but has just forgotten to do something simple, or they've misconfigured something. So the pre-configuration service is a massive time saver. It just means that the engineer arrives on site, can focus on doing his job or her job, and the router that they've got and the SIM card that they work will just work because it's configured the same as every other device that they've got that is known to be working correctly. It just gets rid of the human error.
Can I say, we all know what it's like. You're stuck in traffic, you're heading to site, you know that you've got half an hour just to before the site closes, and you've got half an hour's work to get there. Just a simple turn it on and away you go, isn't it?
Absolutely. As long as you can make some changes to it, if it's not quite fit for purpose. Like, we all want something that just works out of the box, but we all want to be able to customize as well. So it's great to have something that you know is going to work out of the box. It's configured exactly to how you want it. But then at the same time, you know that you can go back in and you can customize that on a site-by-site basis or on a customer-by-customer basis. You can customize it fully.
So if we look at the future of comms, so we've got the PSTN switch off. A lot of issues for one, you know, a lot of PSTN lines not being provisioned now, but also a lot of kit out there that not fit for purpose anymore when the, you know, 5G and, or it'll be, will it be 4G, 5G, or will it just be 5G? Or do we know?
Yeah, a lot of change. Yeah, good question. There's a lot of change going on, and the whole PSTN switch off has been talked about for many years. And then most of us in the industry never believed that 2025 was a realistic forecast anyway, because there are still some huge gaps in the UK when it comes to connectivity. Basically, what it's all about when you talk about the PSTN switch off is they are mothballing an infrastructure that's been built on and developed and since the late 19th century. You know, the Victorians used it. There are still exchanges that look like they're still within in the 19th century. Typically, what they're trying to do is, right, it's moving away from a copper-based circuit switch network to a fiber or IP-based packet switch network. And the thing is that Openreach already have that in place already. So they already have this IP-based packet switch network in. And maintaining the both is just not practical. You've got to have the skills. You've got to keep investing in two infrastructures. So it was going to happen. We didn't think it was going to happen until a little bit later because there's still a lot of questions. You know, so how do you provide new solutions for certain types of customers that rely on PSTN access? So although the security sphere has got a lot of examples of that, consider things like health, hospitals, care homes, all of these that have got dedicated analog lines for PBX systems that they need to be able to keep their services online. Railways, they deploy analog line services right the way across their network as well. So there's lots of examples of that. And I think there are going to be exceptions. I don't think the PSTN switch off is going to be a carte blanche everybody. I think there'll be exceptions. And I don't actually honestly think that'll be the line in the sand. I think it'll probably extend a bit further. But certainly where you've got an option, you'll be expected to do something about it. So some of the alternatives that we're working with our customers to PSTN lines is mobile data. That's one of the big areas, or one of the big products and services that you can use to provide continuity of service when you've got a PSTN line for some kind of application. So take, for example, maybe a lift line or something similar. We can provide a mobile data SIM with a dialer that allows that to continue to function as it did before, but without the physical infrastructure. It's not going to be possible in every scenario with everything, that every possible deployment of PSTN, but in most cases, we've got a solution now for the PSTN switch off. I mean, it'll have a positive impact on communications, I think, generally, in all honesty, just because all the investment's going to go into the packet switch network. And eventually, we might catch up with the rest of Europe, which is just great, because at the moment we haven't, you know, there is still not been quite enough investment in the packet based infrastructure, the IP based infrastructure. So hopefully getting rid of something that is a chain around the neck of Openreach will allow them to invest more money into that, and that's always going to be good.
5G networks, then
they're kind of separate things, but they cross over in some ways, you know, that they are very, very different things. 2G, 3G and 4G is really going to be a replacement for some of the PSTN services that were capped at 60, 70, 80 meg in terms of data speed. Anything above that is generally still on the fiber network. So 5G is another technology, but it's not really addressing specifically the PSTN replacement. That's addressed by 2G, 3G and 4G. 5G is really for providing more throughput to certain applications, not just more throughput, but better performance as well. So it's more geared towards much more mission critical applications like banking systems, retail systems, where they need high performance, low latency, high bandwidth applications. So I can only see that sort of growing. It's not really grown as everybody hoped it would have done when it was first released, but it's continually improving as the investment is made into the networks to further build out the 5G capability that's there. And I still hear a lot of people saying to me, well, hang on a minute, I've got 5G, why am I not getting in these crazy speeds that I was promised at the time or I thought I was going to get? And the answer is simple. It's just that it doesn't work like that. The infrastructure is not there to support those kinds of speeds for everybody.
Whereas at the end of the day, we're still a cup with a piece of string, aren't we? You know, yeah. We're only as good as a signal. That's it. What's new? What do you think or way that it's going?
Proper digital SIMs or eSIMs as they're known. I think that's going to be the next big rollout. We're going to start to see more and more manufacturers of routers and camera equipment allowing more digital type SIM technology in their devices. And that's going to be great because it's going to give installers more flexibility and more choice to be able to change providers as and when they want to change providers rather than being locked in because they don't want the hassle, quite rightly, of going out and swapping out 400 sites. At the moment, you get a piece of plastic and it's got a chip in it and it's got that all housed in it and you put that in the device. But the problem is when you need to swap providers, you need to go and change it. If you put that in software onto the chipset of the device, in practice, you can move providers as and when you want to move providers. And in theory, you could have three or four or five different providers on the same device. So M2M and IoT and mobile data is growing dramatically. That's where I see it going next. And a lot of device manufacturers are building it already into their devices. But eventually, I think very quickly, security installers and security manufacturers will build up that into theirs as well.
It'll be good to see how it goes.